WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Good Monday to you. You are indeed listening to Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi, and we have a great show lined up for you. We will actually come right out of the traffic break by speaking with Kerry Rodriguez. Now, as you know, our first segment is traditionally coined the State House Report, but from time to time, it doesn't necessarily reflect that we are speaking with somebody up at the State House, although we are fortunate enough to have a great relationship with a lot of state senators, state representatives. Sometimes we have constitutional officers who will join us, the governor, the auditor, the attorney general. But we also have folks here on the local level, whether it's a selectman, a select board person, a mayor, town councilor, city councilor, you name it. We like to have them on. Or even somebody who is an activist, somebody who is working on behalf of the citizens. Kerry Rodriguez fits that bill. Kerry, of course, Mom-in-Chief of Massachusetts Parents United. She will be joining us as she was recently up at the State House talking about some issues. And this is in regards to parents who are actually reported to the Department of Children and Families or even the district attorney. If they owe lunch money, and there's usually ramifications if there is a bill that is owed to the school district. We'll talk about that with Kerry. Following Kerry is Carlos De Silva. Carlos, a member of the Hingham School Committee, is also a candidate for Plymouth County Commissioner. We'll talk with Carlos about his campaign and get to learn a little bit about Carlos as a person and a candidate. Second hour, as you know, we are on the eve of a few local preliminaries, I think Braintree, Quincy, Weymouth, Brockton, to name a few. If there are, in fact, races that need to be run to kind of cull down the ballot, the preliminary ballot for the November general election ballot, we will speak with Bernie Hassan. Bernie, a broadcaster, radio guy, also businessman, also knows the city of Brockton well. We'll talk about a couple of the key races in the city of Brockton. We'll talk about mayor, the mayoral race. We'll talk about the at-large race as well. And then we will close things off speaking with Dave Wheeler. Dave is a good friend, and Dave actually recently put out a new book. The book's called The Good Soup Cookbook, 50 Soups and Broths to Improve Health and Well-Being. I'm looking forward to this because I'm a big soup guy. Love soup. And we're coming into that time of year when you have a little bit of a chill in the air. There's nothing wrong with heating up a little bit of soup. Maybe have a grilled cheese sandwich. All of it is applicable here. Of course, these days, healthy choices. You probably don't. I don't eat bread. I try to stay away from bread if I can at all help it, because it usually ends up putting on a couple of LBs around my midsection. So I stay away from it. But I love a good soup. I love a good broth. We will talk with David about that very subject.
Met our friend Dave at this year's Cigar BBQ. Listen, Dave, it's not that I don't like the government. You got me all wrong. It's I don't like a tyrannical government that rips its people off under the pretense of taking care of us, telling us the money is going to be used for something and then using it for something else. Obviously not the MBTA. No, no, no. 18's not an adult. 21 is an adult. Oh, by the way, you can't have that flavor and you can't have that style now that you're a big person. But go ahead, go down the bar and drink all the flavored booze you can and get as clobbered as you want. You want to talk about community impact? They finally fixed 44 down at Plymouth Ragua. It only took 20 years. How's that for community impact? Brennan's Smoke Shop. Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford. Brennan's Smoke Shop. The best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Because we pay our taxes. Dave!
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, we are here for our first segment of the evening, and I could not think of a better start to our program than to speak with the Mom-in-Chief of Massachusetts Parents United. Now, as you know, typically this is the Statehouse Report, and this young lady, Kerry Rodriguez, is a great friend to this program, great friend to parents around the state, and now she actually, Kerry, you have something that's kind of a little bit more of a national focus. You're a founder of this group, or one of a few founders, right?
That's right. We've actually come together. Organizations like Massachusetts Parents United that do really important work of bringing parents together to advocate for things like safer neighborhoods and affordable housing and equitable access to better schools for our kids. You know, Massachusetts Parents United is not unique. There are groups like mine across the country. And, you know, we try to be good friends to one another. And when somebody's in trouble in Memphis, Tennessee, or Los Angeles, California, or Denver, Colorado, I'll often get phone calls saying, Kerry, can you come help us? Because parents aren't being heard, and they want to be able to make sure their voices are heard in conversations that impact their kids. So what we decided to do is, instead of, you know, just trying to do the best we can to show up and not really have any formal affiliation, we wanted to make sure that we could actually formally affiliate and we could share some resources together, some best practices, and make sure that we also have a national voice. Because on the national level, there's just no real voice for parents representing the real priorities of parents and families and what we want for our children. And unfortunately, when you don't have a voice like ours and you don't have a national voice, a lot of elected officials end up making really bad decisions that end up hurting kids and families in our communities. So we felt it was really important. So I'm really excited to come together with organizations across the country to found the National Parents Union. And, you know, we're excited to get people involved.
And is there a website if folks who are tuned in right now want to kind of check it out as we're talking?
Absolutely. If you go to nationalparentsunion.org, you can find all the information there. You can sign up to get more information. I just want to warn folks, we are in formation. It's not for me. I'm not the kind of leader that, you know, comes in and kind of tells people what to do. I really like to sit and listen and to be thoughtful about what parents care about. So right now we're collecting information. We're asking people to get involved, to give us some feedback, to tell us what they're thinking, share their frustrations, their hopes, and help me to build it. So if you go to that website, there's not a lot of information there, but you can sign up to kind of help us build this movement and this effort so eventually we can get to a place where our voices are heard in the spaces where they need to be heard nationally.
You were recently up at the State House testifying in the efforts of making sure that parents aren't being reported to the Department of Children and Families or even the district attorney. What was the conversation about? Why were you called up there? And what is the issue? What's going on?
Well, I got to tell you, Kevin, this is a perfect example about why an organization like Massachusetts Parents United had to come together and we had to build it, and why we're doing the National Parents Union. It's because of ridiculous situations around things like lunch debt and food shaming. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, you think that every community gets free or reduced lunch or breakfast and that kids are just taken care of, because you can't imagine a kid being hungry in school and then the adults around them not wanting to take care of them. But unfortunately, that's not something that's codified into law. So there are a lot of kids that fall through the cracks. What also happens is that if you're right on the cusp, and I know that there are so many people who are probably listening to us right now that understand what I say, when I say you're right on the cusp of that line, you don't really qualify for benefits because there are these very specific metrics that you have to meet so that you qualify for free lunch or reduced lunch or breakfast and all of these additional services. Those families are still struggling, but they have to pay full price for lunch or for breakfast, and their kids are still hungry. And that's a lot of money. That can be up to $150 a month per child. So you have a couple of kids, oh my gosh, you can get underwater really quick. What school districts have decided to do is really implement what we call very ridiculous and draconian policies around what should happen to families if they're not able to pay that $150. Because you think about, you know, the life of a family and everything that's going on, and you're trying to, you know, make sure you keep the lights on, the gas bill paid, you gotta make sure the rent is paid, all of this stuff. You want to keep your car on the road, all of those things that you need just to keep it going. Sometimes it's that lunch bill you get from the school that falls through the cracks. And frankly, if you're a parent like me, some of you also may identify with the fact that sometimes you don't even know what your kids are buying at school because they get that magic number and they get to pick what they want. I was actually in a situation where my youngest child, I was packing him a lunch every day. He was still buying things off the menu. And then I get a bill saying I owe $90. And I'm like, my five-year-old was allowed to run up a $90 bill? That's crazy. But in the end, the schools want their money. So what they end up doing is coming to parents. And if there's no money to give the school district and parents can't pay, it's the children that end up getting the really significant consequences. Sometimes their report cards aren't sent home. Sometimes they're not allowed to graduate. They're not allowed to participate in extracurricular activities. But in some communities, including Hull, including Hingham, including Revere, you know, there are a number of communities across the Commonwealth that have decided to go even a step further where they will hire a collections agency or they will file a complaint with the district attorney in the county asking for charges to be filed. Or they will even make a complaint to DCF, an attempt at a 51A accusing the family of abuse and neglect. And that's actually written into school policy. They don't have to do this. And frankly, we've been contacted by the Department of Children and Families. We've been contacted by some of the district attorneys who said, there's no way we're going to go after families. It's ridiculous to ask us to do that. But unfortunately, you know, some of these school districts are dug in, and they even end up spending more money chasing parents for this debt than it actually, the debt is actually worth. So it's just an absolutely ridiculous situation, and it seems to be re-victimizing families that are already going through a lot of economic trauma, just trying to make ends meet in our communities.
So how did you get called up to the State House, and what was your testimony based on? Is there legislation, or was this just a committee that was meeting to discuss something that's ongoing that maybe could help this situation?
Well, Massachusetts Parents United is now the largest parent advocacy organization in the entire Commonwealth. We have thousands of members in dozens of chapters across the Commonwealth because parents have found there is magic in being able to organize, to have a voice, and to make sure that, you know, they're heard around policies like this. So whenever there's a controversial issue now, sometimes, you know, the legislature will ask for our advice, will ask us what parents think, will notify us that things are happening. In this situation, and, you know, often you'll see us testifying before the Joint Committee on Education because so many of our issues are based upon our education system and trying to fix it, because really it's kind of ridiculous, our education system. It's like this 120-year-old system that is run the same way as it was 120 years ago, the same vacations, the same schedule, the same, you know, in some of the ways, just some of the ways the schools are run. So we're trying our best to try to weigh in and say, like, listen, there are many systems we need to modernize here. There's a lot here that doesn't work for families. So often we're called before them and want to weigh in on bills that they're considering because we need parent context instead of just having teachers make decisions, instead of just having administrators make decisions. You know, families need to be at that table to understand whether or not this is going to work for our children, because it's our children who we're doing all of this for. So in this circumstance, we're a member of the Rise and Shine Coalition, which is a group of organizations across the Commonwealth, the Greater Worcester Food Bank, the food banks really across the entire Commonwealth that are concerned about nutrition for children and families. And that's a top priority for us because we think hungry kids can't learn. You can't ask a child to sit in a classroom for hours on end and actually learn something if they haven't been fed. I don't know about you, Kevin, but like, if I'm hungry, you can't even talk to me, let alone teach me something. And I'm 40 years old.
Right.
So that's a tough, you know, bar to clear if you're 7 or 8 year old, you know, as I think about my own kids in my own house. So, you know, this is a no-brainer for us. The idea that we are food-shaming kids, and to really penalize a 7 or 8 year old, a 9 year old, a 10 year old, because their mom or dad doesn't have money to pay the bill, it's just cruel. It's inhumane. It's ridiculous. And that is not a situation, an adult situation, we want to be putting children through. The shaming of that, having to have a hot lunch in front of you, having it snatched away and being given a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or a cheese sandwich slapped on a plate because your mom can't pay for it. And I'm sorry, you know, there aren't families across the Commonwealth. I haven't met any family who is, you know, sitting there rubbing their hands together saying, oh, I'm going to get one over on the dreaded school system. I'm not going to pay for my kids' lunch. Most people want to pay. Most people do pay. This isn't a significant amount of money. It's just really bizarre policies that need to be fixed, and families are weighing in to make sure they're heard on it.
Are you being called? Seeing you on the state level is fantastic, but are you finding that you or members of your organization are being called to school committee meetings, whether it's in Medford or in Hingham, to speak to this? Are the municipalities dealing with this yet, or have they turned a blind eye to it?
Well, I got to tell you, Kevin, you know me a little bit. I'm like a pit bull with a stick. You show me an injustice, I'm after it. And so when I found out about this, and frankly, there are 30 communities across the state that are really the worst actors. I got mad as hell, because if you're going to hurt kids and you're going to hurt families, like, that's not going to work for me. So what we ended up doing at Massachusetts Parents United with our chapters is we sent letters to every single school committee, to every single city council, to every single superintendent, to their nutrition directors. And then we also followed up and sent messages and letters to their state reps, their state senators, because I don't think their state reps and state senators, the delegations that they send to Beacon Hill, were aware that this was going on in their own communities. And frankly, the people in the communities didn't even know. They were outraged when they found out about it. So this is a multi-pronged strategy. We have called on them to immediately stop enforcing these policies and then change the policies to do that on the local level. But we're also going to make sure on the state level that this is never going to be able to happen again, because this is just, this is power gone mad. This is unfortunately superintendents, school nutrition directors, folks that have gone kind of crazy with power. You know, the idea that I'm going to call a collections agency, or I'm going to call the district attorney to put somebody up on charges because you haven't paid for pizza day, is just crazy. Especially, I mean, Kevin, we're talking about how ridiculous this policy just is on its face. Like, we could go further down the path and talk about the idea that these school districts think that the district attorneys in the Commonwealth and the Department of Children and Families have the time and the capacity to follow through with some of these crazy, ridiculous, and inconsequential complaints. DCF can't even handle the caseload it has with kids and families that are in serious crisis. And now we're going to bother them and say, no, now you've got to screen these families because they haven't paid their lunch bill at school? Are you kidding me?
Well, I'm hoping that there's going to be some kind of action taken, whether it's on the local level or hopefully there's some legislation that's put in place to at least handle this, because I don't believe in food shaming or holding back, whether it's graduation, after school programs, punishing not only the child, but punishing the family, because maybe, you know what, it didn't have the wherewithal to be able to pay the bill in a timely manner, or a timely manner according to that, you know, school district's clock, per se.
This is something that is bipartisan. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go to people, I don't care if you're a Democrat, you're Republican, you're conservative, you're liberal, you go to anybody and you say, God, you know, the taxes that we pay in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, if they were to go to anything, and we spend money on some ridiculous things in the Commonwealth, and we waste a lot of money, but if there is anything that we're going to spend money on, it should be feeding kids. It's making sure that kids in our schools have some food to eat. So they got a decent shot at learning how to read and doing math. So we're not continuing to perpetuate this cycle. I mean, if we think that by enforcing policies like this, you know, these kids are like, we always hear about you got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. We cut the bootstraps off by doing stuff like this. This is a classic example. And it's a no-brainer to fix this. And I'm hoping that the legislature, the Joint Committee on Education, is going to report this out favorably because this is just common sense. And we've got to have more of that in the Commonwealth.
Okay, we are speaking with Kerry Rodriguez, founder, mom in chief of Massachusetts Parents United. If you want to find out more, or if you want to find out the latest news, if I was you, I would go to their website, www.maparents.org. And as it says right on their website, is that it was founded by a group of moms as the independent voice of parents advocating for their children and for other parents across the Commonwealth. We just got a couple of moments left here, knowing that the school year has begun. Anything else you want to kind of share with our listeners that they should be aware of or keep an eye on that you're either working on or that you're eyeballing when it comes to education and taking care of our children in the Commonwealth?
There are a couple of things that I would just love to put on folks' radar. Number one, we have an education funding bill that is going to be coming out of that same Joint Committee on Education any minute. We have been working really hard to make sure that not only do we get more money into our communities, but that money is spent well. Because again, as we just talked about, you know, we spend money on some crazy things and we throw money at problems without any real assurance that we're going to get some results from it. So what we as parents want to do is ask for some receipts. If we're going to spend up to $2 billion in additional education funding, we want to plan. We want to know how you're going to spend that money, and we want to know what we can expect for our kids. So we have worked incredibly hard. We've sent thousands of parents to Beacon Hill and prepared them. Because frankly, you know, parents, like, they don't typically have this, you know, in their day-to-day life where they're going to go talk to an elected official, they're going to go to Boston. But our parents are motivated. And now that we've created this wonderful platform through Massachusetts Parents United, they have the opportunity to go and speak truth to power. So they did it. They stepped up. Thousands of them went to Boston. And we're going to get a compromise bill that is not only going to get additional funding into our cities, but we're going to make sure that it's spent well and spent responsibly so that we get the outcomes that we want for kids. So that's going to be coming up. The other thing that we're working on that is it's not happening immediately, but you know, this is a perfect opportunity to get involved, to get passionate, and to really see what it's like to get involved with Massachusetts Parents United or really have your voice heard at the State House. We're actually working in a wonderful partnership with the Sandy Hook Promise Parents. And folks will remember Sandy Hook, where that terrible tragedy where we lost, unfortunately, an entire classroom full of first graders to gun violence. What we're doing is working with the parents that have founded this organization in Connecticut. They've actually asked for our help here in Massachusetts to pass some additional legislation that addresses gun violence in our schools and in our communities. And, you know, this is not your typical gun violence legislation where we're talking about, you know, legislating weapons and kind of going down that route. We're taking the parent approach and saying, okay, what is at the heart of these issues and what can we do in our schools and in our neighborhoods to really improve the situations that we see so this never, ever happens again. So we're working on a piece of legislation called the Safe Schools Act, where we are going to be setting up systems so that it's easier to report bullying, that there is more mental health counseling for young folks that are going through troubling times, or if their friends are concerned about it, that they have the resources, that we have increased training. So we're not just talking about Alice drills where we're asking kids to kind of hide in a classroom, mm-hmm. And that's your only training against, you know, potential gun violence, but how do we actually train kids to spot, you know, what could be a growing threat within their school so that we can have a better conversation and stop these things before it gets to the point where we have to hide in a classroom. But we want to make sure that it's inclusive, that we're thinking about our special ed kids that are often left out of those conversations, that we're thinking about families of color where, you know, we don't see a preponderance of this kind of activity happening, you know, in urban districts, but it shows up in different ways where you won't see a shooting in a classroom, you'll see a shooting in a neighborhood, but it comes from the same emotional place of frustration and bullying. So I think that's going to be something exciting that you see coming up next year that we're going to be talking about, and we're going to ask parents to get involved to make sure we get it right.
Yeah, we've been speaking with Kerry Rodriguez, founder of Massachusetts Parents United. She's a former journalist. She's also currently a radio show host. I think you're a blogger as well. Organizer, activist, and most importantly, a parent of three children that are in the public schools, in the school system here in Massachusetts. And she cares. Okay. And she's one of many parents who care. And then they realize that they all come together, that they can make things happen. Kerry, I want to thank you again for joining us. And would love to have you back on maybe 6 to 7 weeks, just as for an update on anything that's going on with MPU.
Kevin, I love coming on with you and talking with your audience and your community. It's really important to us, so I'm happy to come back anytime. Thanks for having me.
You got it. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, we're going to speak with Carlos Da Silva. Carlos is a candidate for Plymouth County Commissioner. We'll speak with him in just a few moments here on Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Tune in Wednesday nights at 8 for WATD's talk show, Family Law for You, as host attorney Christian Homsey guides you through procedures involving family law. It might be all new to you, but you don't have to worry. Call into Family Law for You Wednesday night at 8 on 95.9 WATD. Hey! This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We appreciate you keeping it right here to Monday Night Talk, heard only on 95.9 WATD. Of course, if you miss any of our conversations, and that's what they are, they're the conversations. You can go to the homepage, 959WATD.com, scroll down, and click on the Monday Night Talk banner. And I got to tell you, I'm getting ready to breach 1,000 podcasts. That's a lot over the 8-plus years that I have been at the helm of this particular program. Joining us for this segment is a gentleman who is seeking your vote. You know, we have a lot of folks who get out early to talk about the conversations, and that's what our program is about. We have a gentleman who is seeking your vote for Plymouth County Commissioner. His name is Carlos Da Silva. He is here now. Carlos, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Kevin, thank you, and thank you, audience, for, you know, listening.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, Kevin, I came to this country approximately 30 years ago. I did not speak a word of English, and I thought that if I wanted to do well and assimilate to the American culture, I needed to take English as a second language classes, which I did, and then eventually I said, you know what, I want to earn a degree. So I enrolled myself into classes at Quincy College, nights and weekends. It took me a while. I earned my certificate first and then my associate's degree, and then I pursued my bachelor's degree. So I was able to earn an education something that I truly believe in, based on the way I was brought up by my parents. You know, my mother was a teacher, and my father was a policeman. So they instilled in me the importance of education. I say, you know what, in order for me to really enjoy life and be a better, you know, productive member of society, I need to learn the language. And that's exactly what I did.
What do you like to do when you're not, you know, doing the 9-to-5 thing? What do you do when you're, what do you do for work?
Yeah, so I worked for the state for approximately almost a decade. I'll be 10 years with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts with the Executive Office of Labor and Workforce Development. I have held several positions with them, and currently I'm an auditor, so I am assigned to the Plymouth County, Bristol, Norfolk, you know, looking at the employers' records and making sure that they are unemployment tax compliant. I really enjoy my job. And besides that, you know, in 2015, I ran for a school committee in Hingham, a town that I reside with my family since 2007. And I did not win in 2015. So the following year, 2016, I ran and won. I just ran for a re-election this past April, and won re-election, become the vice chair of the Hingham School Committee. So that's essentially what I do. Besides, you know, being home with the family, I have two adults, young sons in college. They just, you know, went back to college, and it was a great summer. So in the, you know, enjoy that time off, you know, in the backyard as well, when I'm not out there serving the community in some capacity.
So if I can ask you, what did you learn from the first time that you ran for office that made you successful the second time? And as you said, you got reelected too, to a second term.
That is correct. You know, you learn, you know, you go over the, you know, what worked, what did not work. I really knock on so many doors and met so many people. There was four candidates for two seats. And obviously the two candidates had a lot of more supporters than I did. And, you know, it was my first time running. Not many people knew me, you know. So I really learned that if I work a little extra hard, I may have a chance of winning the second time. And that's exactly what I did. So one thing that I did uniquely that not many people do is instead of canvas on foot or driving, I actually use my bicycle. You know, Hingham, the driveways are pretty long. And guess what? I was able to reach a lot of more voters that way. And people actually appreciated that you knock on their doors, got to know them. And many lived in the same house for over 20 years. Never had someone running for office at the local level knock on their doors. So they said, you know what? Just because you knock on my door, you earn my vote. And that was a huge thing.
What's that like? What was it like the first time you started knocking on doors? Because not everybody is able to knock on the door and have a cold conversation with someone and introduce themselves, because you don't know what to expect, what's going to happen on the other side of that door.
It's amazing what you learn in life through either your volunteer positions or through your job. I am a former organizer that, you know, organized for SEIU, Local 254. I worked all over the place. I organized many members in Palmer, Ware, Springfield, Providence. Goodness. So part of my job was to actually do house call and visit individuals. So knock on their doors and, you know, face with a no and, you know, come back. And those individuals will sign a card for you seeking representation. So I learned to do that. And one thing with me, I am a people's person. You know, I have, you know, at first, I'm a little shy in getting to know you, but once we start speaking about this different subject, I can go all night long. So that was, you know, because of that background, it was a little easier, but I found that people really appreciated hearing that you're running to serve. And, you know, the beauty of the second time is now you have a record, and people can go back and see what you did. And everything that I set myself out to do, I did. And one of the things I say that, you know, I'm here to listen and to learn, and to apply whatever it is that it is in the best interest of the students, you know, a skill that I hope to, you know, apply here as well. And now in the county, it's 27 municipalities. I have to go out there, listen and learn. And the best way to do that is to knock on individuals' door. Now, I don't know how much time I will have, because I still have to work full time. But I can, you know, assure you that I will do my best to knock on several doors throughout the 27 communities.
Well, getting out now, ahead of, I think, because the election isn't until 2020, if I'm correct.
That is correct.
I think you get plenty of time.
And that is the idea. I mean, you know, I appreciate really, you know, when I have a fundraiser for a nonprofit that individuals show up that are invited. So what I try to do is I apply myself on those individuals' shoes that are running a nonprofit or running a fundraiser for a cause. So I have always showed up in place, especially when you're not, you know, you don't have to donate a lot of money because, you know, I don't have a lot of money. So I have been attending events, you know, all my life. And the last, you know, few weeks, you see my Facebook, you see that I have been attending events, whether it's in Brockton, Plymouth, Hanson, Marshfield. I'm all over the place. And thank God that I have a great wife that's very supportive. Of 26 years. So, now otherwise, I couldn't do it.
Very, very important. If your partner is not supportive, is not engaged in your process, it could be problemsome.
You know, people ask my wife, how do you do it? How do you allow Carlos to do this? And my wife says, you know, it's what makes him happy. He likes to serve. When I'm out there, you know, that is my passion, you know, is to serve the community. You know, as you know, many of our towns, local towns, school committee volunteers. And a lot of people don't know how many hours we really put in. They only see us on TV twice a month, but they don't know that we have several subcommittees that we have to run and meet. You know, but it's such an honor. I learned so much, Kevin, by being on the school committee and being privy to information that many are not. You know, as I mentioned to you, I have a union background. I served as a rep for over 8 years with SEIU. You earned a bachelor's degree in union leadership administration. You know, one of the things is learning how to negotiate a contract in theory and in practice, because I served as a chief contract negotiator at Tufts University, Suffolk University, and other facilities. You know, those skills now is being transferred to the school committee, where we have to negotiate contracts with six unions,
yeah, representing, like
yeah, yeah, representing 683 staff. So, you know, it's a great thing.
So what made you one day wake up and see your next endeavor, and that is just to run for Plymouth County Commissioner? And again, folks, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Carlos Da Silva, and he is a candidate for County Commissioner. He could be knocking on your door soon if you are listening to this in Plymouth County. So as I'll re-ask the question, why do you want to be the next County Commissioner?
So, Kevin, before I moved to Hingham, I served as the chairman of the Quincy Wachu Democratic Committee. And in Hingham, and also I was on the Zoning Board of Appeals in Quincy. But in Hingham, I got involved right away with the party. I really believe that, you know, you have to be involved in order for you to learn what's going on in your town. So I got involved with the Hingham Democratic Town Committee, and I became the chair. I served all the way up until I decided to run for school committee, and I dropped it. But why I decided to run for school committee, individuals would ask, why are you running for school committee? You know, with your skills and background, you have done so much in your life. Why don't you run for higher office? And I mentioned to the individuals at that time that one have to learn how to, you know, crawl before we walk. So, you know, I think it's one step at a time. So what I'm telling you that, you know, I'm not hiding that I may have aspirations. You know, with the blessing of my wife, I may do other things. So I put that out there, that, and I cannot say that it's a stepping stone. But, you know, the opportunity came to run for school committee. People were asking, now, why not others? And I said exactly that. I ran for re-election. I intend to serve my second term with the same passion that I served the first. My term ends in 2022. So by the time, hopefully, I will be elected and seated, will be the beginning of 2021. So I will have maybe 13 months left on my term, and I intend to serve. But the idea is that, you know, people approached me and go like, well, why don't you run for county commissioner? And I gave a lot of thoughts, obviously with the approval of my, wife. And I said, you know what, I have support. I don't have the money, but I have grassroots. I have the community behind me. and I'm going to do this. And that is how I decided.
It's interesting you say that. Two things that I want to kind of emphasize here. You talk about grassroots, and people automatically think, oh, well, it's an inexpensive campaign. Well, I will remind folks that prior to Charlie Baker, Deval Patrick ran a grassroots campaign and was a two-term governor. One thing that I, as somebody who pays attention to politics, one thing that I appreciate is somebody who wants to crawl before they walk. And there's many times, and I've interviewed thousands of candidates, and there's been a few who have been in here who have no municipal experience. They have no experience, and this isn't a bad thing. Just everybody has a different approach to it. So you can't say what's right or what's wrong. But I, as somebody who wants to see the best people in the best places, if they're going to be serving the community, the population, is that at least they are engaged and that they're willing to learn about, A, what's going on with the municipality. I don't feel that you can go to a higher level unless you understand what's going on in those communities. So seeing that you have progressed from one level to the next, I mean, who knows? There may be a day that we come in here and we're talking to Governor DeSilva. Who knows?
Well, obviously I cannot be president.
That could change. You never know.
But anyhow, Kevin, I appreciate the fact that you invited me to this interview and give me the opportunity to reach out to many homes at once, especially when you're running for office in 27 communities. And I say that, when you speak from the heart and you've been truthful to voters, they know whether you're for real. I don't run based on an incentive of earning, a salary. I have a full-time day job. Thank God. I'm very happy where I am. I'm running for this county commissioner position. Obviously, there is a pay, so, my intention, truthfully, is to reinvest that money right back into the community. How? I intend to be very transparent. I intend to be visiting the communities and holding office hours. Learn more what I can do differently from what, commissions that are there now and the ones before them are doing. I intend to actually learn from the other counties, what they're doing differently, that we can improve, do better here. So my goal is to, while I'm traveling, be in mind that, at least, I may not have to use my own money for the traveling and stuff like that because there is a little pay in the position.
Do you feel that your multilingual background will be an asset to the commission?
So interesting enough, I met Vinny Demacedo for the first time just a couple of days ago, and he said to me, good luck, and wow, are you Portuguese? So I said, well, many years ago, yes, Brazil. I'm originally from Brazil, and my grandfather on my mother's side was Brazilian Indian, and on my father's side, of Portuguese, background. Obviously, Brazil has been around for a little over 500 years. Mm-hmm. So there was no Brazil. It was Portugal. It was part of Portugal. He indicated that definitely will help because, obviously, Plymouth County, there is a lot of Cape Verdeans, a lot of Portuguese, a lot of Latinos in general. And I most definitely will utilize my trilingual skills. I have done that for many, many politicians, even for unions. Reaching out to, individuals out there that they don't speak the language and they are part of a society. How do you reach out to them? And that is part of why I'm running as well, Kevin. I feel that, a lot of people talk about diversity. We embrace diversity. We embrace this. We embrace, But, let's really be real. What are you doing to reach out to the houses and homes of those individuals that cannot speak the language? And I think I can do a great job in explaining to, those residents in their own language what is, the job of the commissioners and perhaps how we can help them.
We just got a couple of minutes left here, and again, we're speaking with Carlos DeSilva. He is a candidate for county commissioner. If you could, what do you think are some of the main issues that you're ready to tackle, whether it's in a political forum, when you engage those who are either seeking re-election or who might want to be a candidate as well, and that you're willing to tackle if you are elected next year?
There's two areas that, you know, like I mentioned here, transparency. You know, I would love for the meetings to be televised and be broadcasted on the 27 communities. I enjoy actually watching the other entities in town. I watch the Board of Selectmen. I don't have time to go to the meetings, so I watch the Board of Selectmen at home at the comfort of my, you know, living room and sipping a glass of wine. And
wait, you're a red wine or white wine guy?
Red wine guy. Oh, actually, I drink all kind of wines in front of me, so I will tell the volunteers out there, don't be afraid to put in a white wine on the table, but I am mostly a red wine. Okay. I drink a lot of Malbec and Merlot. So,
Merlot myself. But as you were saying, you mentioned about watching the meetings. And you'd like to see them televised.
I would love to see them televised and broadcasted out here, you know, placed on social media so people could see it. Mm. It's a great thing. You know what I mean? The second thing is I find and I hear complaints of the parking ticket processing. A good friend of mine got a ticket in Quincy. But issued by the MBTA police, and tried to appeal. The process was a pain in the neck. If he was not an attorney, he couldn't do it, okay? And when he called the county commissioner's office, they pushed back to the MBTA. Called the MBTA, they pushed back to the commissioner. So it was back and forth. So I would like to see that process, because my understanding right now is a process that, you know, some municipalities take advantage of, not others. In Hingham, in particular, they have their own entity that runs the parking violation. And I want to see what's working there, what's not working, how we can improve it. In my understanding, that is not making money. So perhaps, you know, we ought to do something differently. I would like to, you know, do a little more study on that area and see if we can either, you know, pass it back to the communities or improve it.
Okay. We got just enough time for you to wrap up. I will encourage you is if folks want to find out more about your campaign, please don't feel that you only need to use English, because, again, you are trilingual. And feel free to address your audience using this particular medium.
So to everyone at home listening to this program, and I thank you for the opportunity to be here, Kevin. You can reach me via my email, carlosforcommissioner@gmail.com. And I want to thank you for allowing me to speak in Portuguese and Spanish. Para los ouvintes de habla espanhol que estão na casa, meu nome é Carlos da Silva, estou concorrendo a comissário regional pretendo fazer trabalho bueno para vocês. Se quer saber mais sobre mim, por favor, entre em contato comigo através de e-mail carlosforcommissioner@gmail.com. Para aqueles falantes do idioma português, que é um idioma, né, muito bonito, eu gostaria de chegar até o seu lar, até a sua casa, e agradecê-lo pela oportunidade de estar ouvindo esse programa e dizer-lhe que eu estou concorrendo a comissário regional aqui na região de Plymouth e eu espero ganhar o seu suporte. E, por favor, se quer saber mais sobre mim, me envie um e-mail, carlosforcommissioner@gmail.com.
Excellent. Carlos, I want to thank you so much for taking time to join me today to talk about your campaign. And I have a feeling that you're going to be back a couple of more times. Just kind of give us updates as you get this thing off the ground and get out there and get energized running for county commissioner.
Well, Kevin, I want to thank you once again for having me. And it was an honor, to just be here with you and your listeners. And I really appreciate it.
Well, that's it for the first hour of Monday Night Talk. Again, find out more about Carlos da Silva when you have a chance, as he's given you all that information. And again, make sure you know who the folks are that you are voting for. Again, you got a lot of elections that are coming up next year. There are going to be a lot of races on the ballot. You got a lot of time, and it's great that a gentleman like Carlos has gotten out early. You going to say something real quick?
So, Kevin, one thing I want you voters to know that, you know, as you hear me, I am like Meia Menino. Not a fancy talker, but I get the work done.
It was very nice. I like that. And I actually had a chance to interview Mayor Menino one time. And he was
a gentleman.
He was a fantastic gentleman. He was in the middle of something. Sorry, I'll just tell you real briefly. It was before they had the Rocky Marciano statue in Brockton, there was a talk about they're going to have it in Boston. And I had a chance to interview the mayor about that. And he was at a function. And even though he was busy with the function, he took 5 minutes to for a local journalist like me to give me a couple of words on the matter, and was very, very gracious. So I'll always remember that about the mayor. Well, we are going to step aside for a couple of moments here. When we come back, hour number two of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Please don't go anywhere.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Every Monday night at 8, stay tuned to 95.9 WATD for Cross Jack Radio.
We're your hosts, Alex Bazanson, Andy Bernstein, and two-time Stanley Cup winner, Kevin Stevens.
Our mission at Cross Jack Radio is to end the stigma of substance abuse through media, outreach, and awareness.
Each week, we deliver relevant content, celebrity and notable guests, and useful information in our discussions about addiction and substance abuse.
Tune in to Cross Jack Radio tonight at 8, here on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, we are back for the second hour of Monday Night Talk. Whether you know it or not, there are a couple of communities here on the South Shore that are going to be holding preliminary elections to kind of whittle down, if they need to, their ballots for November. And joining me is a good friend. Not only is he one of the best real estate guys in and around the South Shore. He's one of a couple that I would say that about. But he's also a great radio guy. He's got a hell of a voice. I'm kind of envious of his voice. But he also knows what's going on in the city of Brockton when it comes to politics. He knows the heartbeat of that city. And he was somebody who, you know, when I was doing radio many, many moon ago in Brockton, he was the guy that I had the privilege of sometimes producing his program, talking about none other than Mr. Bernie Hassan. Bernie, welcome. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, welcome. Thank you. Thank you for the welcome, and thank you for the kind words, Kevin. Always great to hear from you. I remember the days we did our old show, Real Estate Today.
That's correct. It was a heck of a program, and it wasn't just necessarily talking about the latest listings. You know, you had a variety of guests who would come in and talk about various issues in and around the community that, you know, while it might have been somehow real estate related, it was good to have some of those folks, whether you had a police chief on, you had whoever the sitting mayor was at that time, to come on in and talk about what's going on. So, you know, it's...
Oh, yeah. We had returning veterans.
Yes.
We had musical groups. I mean, it was a two-hour show. I mean, how much real estate can you really talk in two full hours?
but also knowing, you know, I thought I would tap you knowing that you and I were kindred spirits with a gentleman who is no longer with us, who passed just a couple of months ago, knowing that we are on the cusp of the city elections in Brockton tomorrow night, as they're going to have 7 wards, 28 precincts, folks getting out and voting and culling down the list of folks who are running for mayor, who are running for city council, who are running for school committee. You and I have had these conversations over the years, and you're a trusted and valued voice. I think I don't start this conversation without us at least talking a little bit about Mayor Bill Carpenter, the late Mayor Bill Carpenter, and his legacy. Talk to me about, you know, an election, knowing that if Bill was still here with us, that, let's be honest, he would have been a favorite to be one of two folks that would be on the November ballot.
Yeah, I think he would have won hands down, but, you know, again, every day is an almost a day that goes by that I don't think about the guy. And somebody had posted the BCA and A couple of the guys that worked for him posted a great video that's on Facebook and on YouTube, just capitalizing from way back in time when he was manager of youth hockey and being a ring announcer and right through his, you know, first inaugural and things that he would do and speeches he made. And it was really kind of touching, and it made me miss the man because, you know, I was talking to a city councilor last week who I ran into on the west side, and he said to me, just think about the one man's death, how it has impacted what's going on in the city this morning. And quite frankly, you sent me this list of candidates, and while I knew there was many, I mean, there's almost 50 candidates in preliminary election. I don't know if that's something that has ever happened here. Maybe it has. Maybe I just didn't pay that close attention. But here we go. So, yeah, he is very, very much missed, certainly by the city, and I can tell you myself personally that he was a friend of mine. We spoke regularly.
Yeah, it's interesting to note, and you were talking about that video that brought to Community Access and many of the folks who worked with Bill. Think of the hours of footage they had to go through to cull that down and make it a nice piece, because Bill was not someone who hid from a microphone or from a camera. He embraced it. He would use it as something regularly to reach out to the residents and talk to the residents, whether it was as an elected official or if he was doing something with Jimmy Birchfield down at CES, where, you know, doing the MMA fights or the boxing, or he was on ESPN. And, you know, so he wasn't somebody who was shy, and having to go through all of that footage and trying to put together a compilation, it must have been some task.
I'm sure it was, because you're right, the man was everywhere. And he knew how to use social media and the media as well as any elected official I have ever known. And I'm talking even President of the United States. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's a big loss. It's a big loss personally, because he was just a wonderful guy.
So you look at, you talk about the list. The two main races that you and I are going to kind of talk about over the next 25 minutes will be the mayor's race, will be the at-large race. I know that there are 7 candidates for mayor. I believe there's actually 6 true candidates. If folks tuned in last week, we did have a conversation with a group of the mayoral candidates. That, of course, that podcast is up. The video is up from that. But then there's 15, 16 at-large candidates. That's not unusual, because what's going to end up happening is that'll get pared down to 8 that will be on the November ballot. But when you're looking at the names who are on the list for mayor, what are the names that jump out at you? And, you know, if you will, I know you probably know half to most of these individuals who are running for mayor.
Running for mayor, I would tell you that pretty much, well, you know, just about everybody, one of them is maybe one. Yes.
Okay.
I do. You're correct. And so what would you like to know? I mean, any thoughts? My thoughts?
Yeah, I'd like to, there's a little bit. It's interesting that I think that up until the end of June, you might have had 3 candidates. Potentially 3 candidates. I know that there were folks who hadn't pulled paper, so you might have had 4, because you had until the end of July to be able to pull nomination papers, have the signatures, and then get them in by the first, you know, week or two of August. I guess I would ask you, who are the contenders in this race, and you know, who do you feel that has the best shot to be on the ballot come November? And you don't have to say these two. You can say, give your thoughts. As I feel maybe this person
well,
and this person.
I mean, looking at this, there's a couple of names here at the mayor. Karina Mompilis, and I don't know the woman, but her signs have popped up here and there.
Yep.
And then there's Stephen Figueredo Jr. You know, these guys, these two, I don't believe have any political experience that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you really look at the some of the more experienced candidates further up the list, it would be tough for them to even probably garner enough votes to have some relevance in this. But when you talk about looking for top candidates. I mean, I think you have to look at Mark Lawton, Robert Sullivan, Mr. Darren Court, and, of course, Jimmy Pereira would be his second time. Tony Branch, wonderful man, but, you know, and he's got some name recognition, but I'm not sure where I position him there yet. But that's kind of how I see it. Those four are probably the ones that are going to gather the most votes and vying for the position to go to the next step.
As I had set up our you know, the introduction to you, Bernie, you are a man that it's undeniable that you have your finger on the pulse of Brockton, not only as someone who's a realtor, not only as somebody who grew up in the city and was indoctrinated by your family into what was going on, you know, politically, what's going, you know, just to be aware, but also as a great musician. You know, you get to get out, you have a chance, a great cross-section of voters and people, and I'm sure you've walked by and within earshot heard people talking about city elections, at least at some point over the past 5 or 6 weeks. What do you feel the real issues in this race that are going to be a deciding factor in who will be on the November ballot?
Are you talking the mayor's race in particular?
We'll stick with the mayor's race for the moment, yes.
Yeah, sure. You know, here again, people, unfortunately, do not understand probably, I think, in general, what that job entails. And quite frankly, you know, you could end up and have maybe ended up in the past with a mayor that may not have expanded that role into what it could really be. And as a result, I think, you know, a lot of the progress you've seen specifically in our downtown area, which is always the heaviest lift, and again, it maybe not so much, it does fall into the political discussion because it's such a heavy lift to correct it. This particular mayor got it. He got what he needed to do to get people in Washington to stand up and look at Brockton, get people at the State House to stand up and look at Brockton. He got what that meant. So the next mayor's got, quite frankly, while that was, he wasn't a big man, Mayor Carpenter, the next mayor has huge shoes to fill. He worked, you know, working this job and is a real big deal. So, and I'm not sure people understand that. So when I do get to hear and talk to a lot of people, and people ask me all the time, and all, that's exactly what I tell them. It does require an inordinate amount of hours and energy to, you know, again, you're dealing with an 11-member city council that wants, you know, that definitely is one of the biggest deciding factors in the government. And then you're dealing with the state and the federal government to try and bring back the city, especially the center. Now, when I say bring back the city, Kevin, we may have not have talked about this in past interviews, but I've been through a couple of recessions in this business and in this city. And each time, and especially this time, the city comes roaring back as it is. You can see it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, real estate prices at a level that are astronomical, and it just still seems to be growing. However, that city center is always a heavy lift. And that is incumbent upon the mayor and the city council to do that. And really takes the mayor, because he's the guy day-to-day, full-time, banging on doors to get money and people to invest down there. So that's the next big fix in this city. It really hasn't been fixed in the last two recessions. The city has grown everywhere except for downtown. But you're just seeing it now again for the first time. See some growth.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because, you know, I've had conversations talking about a lot of the projects that are still ongoing, the transit-oriented projects, housing projects, mixed-use developments, 40R smart growth that are popping up in and around the city. You got a couple that are on Center Street. You got one, the old welfare offices there on Commercial Street. That's going to be, there'll be a ribbon cutting in just about a week and a half. As that comes online for housing, knowing that this is all going on, how important is that going to be something that the next mayor is going to have to make sure that they're keeping the progress moving forward, and that they understand what the next couple of puzzle pieces need to be fit in to be able to make this a success, this revitalization of the city center?
It's very important, and I'm glad you bring that up. I had commented on it. And of course, you know, we all have our opinions here in the city. But naturally, real estate is one of my expertises, mm-hmm. and I can tell you, we need housing stock. I mean, the governor put a bill out, and I don't know what he floated it last spring. I don't know where it went. I'd like to revisit to see where it went, where it's something to help cure the housing stock dilemma in this state. And I'm not talking just purchase homes. I'm talking rentals. Mm. Rentals were even worse than purchasing a home. I mean, you know, people will put an apartment in, and, you know, they'll have 50 inquiries, 20 applications. We, as far as the 40R and 40B, it was something that hadn't really been part of Brockton because we had housing stock for so long, but we've grown to a point where we need more, so it's important. There's one that came up, I believe, up on Thatcher Street that went before planning the other day, and now they're trying to send it back to the city council to repeal it. And, you know, Wynn Farwell, who was also running as councilor at large, he's like, you know, we already approved this. You want to send it back to repeal it. You know, I understand people don't like change. That's the other part of the growth. We're going to have to deal with change. And everybody wants change and growth and the city to be fixed, but they don't want it done next door to them. And, you know, that's a hard thing to do when you're looking at this, when we really do need the units.
So when we look at these candidates, again, there's seven of them. I think we've identified two of them that, you know, maybe they're building name recognition. But if we're looking at five candidates who have a chance, recently we had an incident with a young mayor down in Fall River who's been arrested for a second time, Jassy O'Carrier. Does something like that, where you have a young chief executive officer who has been in trouble, is that something that voters look at and saying, I don't know if I want somebody young who doesn't have experience, so they may look to the Mark Lawtons, the Robert Sullivans, the Tony Branches?
Well, so, I mean, again, that situation, Fall River, never ceases to amaze me how a guy like that can get into office and then pull that stuff off and finally get caught. This U.S. attorney is no fool. Mm. But with that in mind, you know, these candidates here in Brockton, I've met them all, you know, the ones that we spoke of, the top five or so that we would say would have the best shot at getting in. And I know them all very well, and they're all very well-intentioned. I do believe that this city is at a point where, and the former mayor used to say this all the time, this is no time for on-the-job training. So when you look at that, then you got to begin to look at people who have criteria. So that's what I'm looking at. And if you'd like me to go through the four or five of them and give you my opinion.
Please do.
And I'm just looking from the bottom up in no particular order. So this is Mark Lawton. Mark Lawton, obviously, and part of the biggest issue is going to be residency. I understand that right now, he's registered here in Brockton. He plans on moving to Brockton and selling his home in Bridgewater if he gets saved. So that's an issue. That's an issue for the people. I get it. So when I talk to people that are in favor of him, they're in favor of him for the numbers of things and experiences that he's had as a judge, as a state representative, and quite frankly, as a person who helped get the previous mayor into office multiple times. And he's got a real big good handle on government and on the law. He's a lawyer. So he's done a lot of things for people that people don't know. Then you look further up at Bobby Sullivan, 14 years on the city council. I believe he's run at large the entire time.
Yep.
And running at large, you're running the entire. So running council at large is a task. It's a task probably second only to running for mayor. And Bobby's won every time that I believe. I don't believe he's ever lost an election.
Nope.
And he's an attorney, and he's a smart kid. And he's been at the city for a some time, mm. you know, giving his time to the city. So there's the candidate. Tony Branch is a great man, you know, Bishop Tony Branch, wonderful man, does a lot of things in the city for people. He could be a dark horse. I don't know because he really does have a decent coalition of people that care for him and come out for him. But again, being the mayor and knowing how to navigate ordinances and understand government, that's a whole nother matter. Jimmy Pereira, this is the second time. He did gather a lot of votes for himself in the last election, but I still don't get the message, you know, when I listen. I don't hear anything about how to do things with regard to, you know, how we're going to deal with the state and federal government revitalizing downtown. I mean, Mayor Bill Carpenter hired a city planner that we hadn't had a city planner in the city for decades, I believe. And you can see what that has done already by having an organized city planner inside the planning department of the city. It was a shame that we ever stopped having one. I don't know why we thought we didn't need a city planner, you know. And I don't know if they – and then, of course, Gene Bradley Derencourt, he's, you know, he's quite the story. He's quite the success story. You know, he's navigated the state house as an aide. He's also a counselor at large here in Brockton and very well-intentioned. But, again, I'm not sure that this is exactly the time for somebody who's never been at that level. So – but we'll see. Again, you know, Bill Carpenter came off two rounds as a school committee person. Well, you know, so it's hard to say. So those are the ones that I think are looking at the voting public. And again, the voting public in this city isn't necessarily the population.
Right.
I don't know what the number is. Is it about 20,000 registered voters?
No, it's funny. It's excellent that you ask me that because I can give you two things. I spoke with Cynthia Scrivani today. And she told me we got 55,000 registered voters, and she's expecting between 20% and 25% to get out and vote. And that's usually what I do historically. I'll, you know, whoever the executive director of the Elections Commission is, I did with the previous executive director, and again, I spoke with Cynthia today, so I can at least be up to speed. And that's what she gave me for numbers. If I can kind of jump in here real quick, you had mentioned about Bob Sullivan not losing. He's never lost a city race, but let's not forget that he lost a close vote. It's like a 15 vote. Remember down 2008 for
yes,
the state rep
seat
to Mike Brady, and you had Connor Units that was part of that whole thing.
Yeah,
they did a recount, and of course Mike Brady went on to be the state rep, and now he is the state senator. And then when Jerry Creedon stepped aside and decided to retire from the state house. You had Claire Cronin, and you had, and I said this to both Jay Stewart and to Robert Sullivan, and I says, I think you two are going to split the vote. What did they do? They split the vote. They had name recognition, but the folks decided to, and of course, Claire went on to win that. So those are the two races, but what bodes well for Robert Sullivan is that the past five city elections, I believe that he has been the top vote getter. Will that help him? I think so. I think so.
Yeah, I do. It does absolutely helps him.
I see Robert Sullivan being a part of that conversation for the two spots on the November ballot. I see Jimmy Pereira and I see Gene Bradley Derencourt because they've been out there from the beginning of the year campaigning, and I think that's going to help them. I think Mark Lawton will be on the outside looking in, and I think Tony will be as well, just because, again, I want everybody to win, but it's not going to happen. And I'm kind of, you know, these are, you know, while there's name recognition, I think you brought it up as far as that going to be an issue that somebody's running from outside of the city and was going to move to the city, but is not necessarily a resident. I've talked to Mark, and Mark's like, listen, my family's been here for ages, and I've had a business here just because, you know, basically I'm not sleeping here. I'm here 7 days a week. He's got a law office.
And you know, he is correct about that. Yeah. His family is really involved and has been involved. Sure. But, again, it's a unique thing. I mean, again, this is all happening because of the death of Bill Carpenter.
Yep.
And, you know, I had a conversation with a business person that said to me, and this is more than one of them, but who's in the city as a business person, he says, if there's a fire in my house and the fire department sends a group of firefighters and the guy that gets out of the truck to knock down the door and come in and rescue me, I want the best firefighter possible. I don't care if he doesn't live in Brockton.
Mm.
You know, and he brought it up in several instances. And so here again, do I think the mayor needs to live in Brockton? Yes, he does. Okay. And I think Mark understands that. But like I said, that is the hurdle he has. But he felt compelled to do this, just like Bobby Sullivan did, just like Gene Bradley Derencourt did, mm-hmm. just like Jimmy Carrera does. They all have their mantra as to why they're doing it. And you got to give them credit because this is not easy to do.
Yeah.
This is not. This is running citywide for an office like that in Brockton. It's not. I've been at a bunch of these campaigns even prior to all the way back to Jack Units, and these are bruising battles. They really are.
Again, we're speaking with the great Bernie Hassan, a good friend, a radio broadcaster, Wycott Realty. You know, he does it all, and also understands the politics. We're just gonna, Bernie, we've got like, you know, 3 or 4 minutes left here. It probably is gonna do justice in regards to the at large race, but I'll run down the list real quick here. And if I say anybody's name wrong, I apologize, but we want to, at least in full disclosure, at least give everybody's name and not just kind of blindly just throw names out. But we got Jeanette Kyer, we have Raymond Henningsen Jr., and Beauregard. That's actually City Councilor Ann Beauregard, who's actually seeking an at-large seat. You have Rita Mendez. You have Moses Rodriguez, who was at-large, who's serving as mayor, but is running again for at-large. You have Scott Hall, Adius Pierre, Gary Keith Sr., who I think Gary is a member or has been a member on, I don't know if it's the ZBA or the Planning Board. You have Councillor Wynn Falwell. You have Alex
Drosso. Alexandros Kosmidis.
Thank you very much.
You got it, brother.
Kevin Borges, Tina Cardoza, Larry Curtis, Mark Adams, and it kind of rounds out the list. And of course, Larry, we know Larry, who does the Deadly Silence.
Also Bernadine Silvestri.
I don't see that on the list. Did I miss that?
Yeah, that's at the top of the list, but he is out there. He's the last one.
Very good. way to get that one. I missed that. I didn't have my Excel sheet scrolled all the way to the top.
Got you covered. Got you covered, Jeff.
So do you
cover me all the time?
So here's my thought: is how do you feel about the incumbents? Well, first off, the incumbent, which is Wynn Falwell. He's technically the only incumbent because Moses right now is serving as mayor, but he is kind of an incumbent. And then
he's an incumbent.
You got Ann Beauregard, who was Ward 5 city councilor, but now she's trying to run citywide. Give me your thoughts on this.
I think Falwell and Rodriguez have enough name recognition at this point in the run, they'd probably get in. As for the rest, This is quite the group of people who, you know, none of them, I don't believe, have been at the city level before. So running citywide the first time is a task.
Yep.
Although Gene Bradley Derencourt did it, and he got in. Ann Beauregard is a Ward 5 councilor, so she's probably up there on the list. But you're running now against multiple candidates. Gary Keith has run several times. Kevin Borges has some name recognition. He's been involved in politics around town. Same with Larry Curtis and
Scott Hall too.
Scott Hall has run a number of elections. I don't believe he's garnered a lot of of votes, but he does run fairly regularly for something. Mm. So, but and this is the problem. I think the size of this list. So if you take away the two or three councilors that are currently incumbents, and you could consider Ann one, maybe not a councilor at large.
Right.
So what are you left with? If you're looking at eight, so you're going to have, you know, five slots. And so now you have to really start looking hard at the name.
Mm.
So it's going to be interesting there. I tell you, it's going to be interesting. You could end up with quite the change at your city council level, currently awarded at large, anyway.
Well, yeah. What's interesting, and I'll just throw this up before we wrap this up, and that is, I think Tina Cardoza, you know, she was running for Ward 3. I think she's got a little bit of name recognition. I think that Gary Keith, as you mentioned, he's got name recognition. Rita Mendez, I've seen her signs everywhere. That doesn't mean that those signs are going to vote, but I see her signs everywhere, which means that she's been out there pounding the pavement. And of course, Ray Henningsen Jr., who I think he's been running since last year.
Absolutely. And, of course, Ray has already, you know, done some service.
School committee, right?
Yeah.
So he's got names. So it'll be interesting to see how it all whittles down. But I think it's important to tell folks, it's important to get out there and cast about. Don't think just because it's a preliminary that you don't need to be heard. You do need to be heard. Get out there.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you want to say quickly to wrap up, Bernie?
No, really, Kevin, I appreciate you giving me a call. I really enjoyed the time doing this morning, this evening. So, I mean, I really think it's, important that everybody gets out and we make sure we get the vote out.
Bernie, thank you again for your time. And I would love to have you, maybe we'll have a little bit of a roundtable thing in the next couple of weeks to kind of really break this down with the folks who are on the November ballot. What do you say?
Absolutely. Give me a call. I'll be happy to do it.
You got it. All right. We are going to step aside, and as I promised about 25 minutes ago, well, we're going to talk soup with David Wheeler.
Soup.
Love soup. What's your favorite soup?
I don't know, but I saw Dave's book, and it looked really great.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a few moments right here.
All right, brother.
95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See? There is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield. It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Okay, we return for our final segment. I try to save the best for last, and I know I teased it while we were talking with Bernie Hassan. This gentleman, he has been here before talking books. He's an author. The Good Soup Cookbook. Mm. 50 soups and broths to improve health and well-being. I don't even need to read the last part. I'm just a soup guy personally. And so we have Mr. David Wheeler, who is here. David, welcome back.
Hey, great to be here. Thank
now,
you.
Did I say that wrong? Should I be saying DW?
No, I don't know why I did that. I just did it.
What goes into putting together a cookbook? What was it like for you to say, because you got 50 here, there had to have been like 75, and you're going, oh, these don't make the cut.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Well, first of all, it's a lot of fun if you like to cook, which I love to cook. So you have to experiment and try things and tweak recipes. And, you know, it's a good excuse to cook your favorite soups over and over and over again, too, you know, and variations. But it started, I actually wanted to do a family recipe book. My mom has some old recipes of her from her mom and all that, and we've been kind of looking at them together. And to be honest with you, she was moving too slow for me with getting the recipes together, so I started kind of doing this. And then at the same time, my mom had some health issues, so she needed a heart-healthy diet. She doesn't eat as much as she used to. She loves soup, so I started doing these low-sodium soups, and I realized that a lot of the soup cookbooks out there, and believe me, I have a ton, are either filled with ingredients you can't find, ingredients you don't want, or they're loaded with bouillon and salt and cream and butter. And I took all that out. I think there's maybe one recipe in this book that has butter, and that's clam chowder, obviously.
Obviously. Yeah, so it's interesting. And I actually grabbed his book for the interview. And it's interesting that you kind of tell your story just at the very beginning of the book, and that is being somebody who was working in the city of Brockton. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of, when you're working and some depending on what you have for time, and you're not just somebody who worked in the city, but you're also somebody who served, you know, in other capacities. Mm-hmm. To I guess that's what people do, is they want to the civic engagement and get involved with the community and serving on boards and committees. Sometimes you may not eat healthy or as healthy as you could.
Right. You know. You don't. And even, you know, for a while I was working in Boston too. I was taking the T in and out. And you know, A, it's too easy to spend $10 for lunch, which is absurd. And B, you know, you're wolfing down a pizza or a sub or a cheeseburger, and it's just not good for you. It just isn't. And I also find, you know, I just turned 50. The older I get, I actually less food. I don't eat as much as my appetite just isn't there.
You're lucky.
Well, it is for the bad stuff, but
right?
Yeah. So what I try to do is fill up my life with the good stuff now. So like you have a mason jar here of some soup.
Yeah, and it's always good. Listen to any of my future guests. This is excellent, David. Thank you so much for that. You brought, what was this thing you brought? You brought me creamy tomato soup.
No, this is the roasted tomato and garlic soup.
I stand corrected.
Yeah, yeah. It's tomato with some balsamic, some garlic. Yeah, roasted. It's good.
So as you were saying, it's interesting. Here is the thing that you say, in you're telling your story, mm-hmm. at least to give a premise to your book here, is that the only vegetables you were getting were your sandwich toppings. That's intriguing.
It's true. I'm telling you, man, I took stock of my life one day and I said, you know, what am I doing? I'm going up another size in my pants. I haven't worked out. I haven't eaten a vegetable other than, you know, whatever's been on the tuna sandwich or something, or the burger.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know, how do I like my vegetables? I prefer them in soup. I just do. For the longest time I was single, I'm not going to sit down and cook like broccoli, rice, a whole, you know, a piece of chicken. Like, I'm just not going to do that as a single person. So, but soup, it was something, you know, I can put it on the stove. And it really helped with the writing, to be honest with you, because what I would do is I'd get up early and I'd put something on the stove that had to simmer for 2 or 3 hours, which forced me to sit at my desk and do some writing. You know, there was no going out. There was no, oh, I'll take the dog for a walk or whatever, because there was something cooking all the time. So I really think it came together. And it is true, when I wrote about my lifestyle changes, my blood pressure is, 120 over 70. It hasn't been that way in a long time. My cholesterol's down. My weight is down. I still have a ways to go. But for me, this worked. So that kind of also got me thinking, if this worked for me, maybe it'll work for someone else.
And it's intriguing that you say that, because I too... I'm walking a similar path as you. I'm a couple of more clicks more than 50. Mm. But as you get older, you realize that if you do not maintain your body properly, and I was in that vein. I actually recently saw my doctor. When he saw me last year, you do your blood work and, you know, to check your urine, and he was worried about any issues with diabetes. Mm-hmm. My cholesterol was off the charts. You know, triglycerides were up there. Everything. He's like, oh my God, you're
a mess. You're a mess.
we're gonna have to medicate you in order to kind of get. So what I've done is I've tried to do soup is some of the way. I'm a broth guy. We'll get into that in a couple of moments. I don't want to tip my hand just yet, because I want to kind of go through the different soups that you have shared here and how you went about it. But you know, watching what I eat and how I eat and when I eat, I mean, diet, I feel, is 90% of the thing. And I, like I said, I recently saw him. I'm down a significant amount. He's like, oh my God, you've lost, you know, a small child. I go, kind of, yeah.
That's great.
But then when he looked at my labs, I'm perfect across the board.
Yeah. It's really amazing, isn't it? Nutrition and diet are really probably the most important lifestyle thing you can do, you know?
So you started out here talking stocks and broth. Talk, and there's a few here that I've never had a chance to try, whether it's like corn stock or fish. I didn't know they had like a fish broth. Or...
Well, the fish stock, I wouldn't recommend drinking that one alone.
Okay.
That one, that's, you know, good for the base for a lobster bisque or a clam chowder or something like that. But the premise is, I start off with the stocks for two reasons. One... You can't have a good soup without a good stock, period. And I've seen too many cookbooks where it's like, oh, just get, you know, canned stock and pour that in. And that's sacrilege. I'm from an Italian family. That's akin to jarred spaghetti sauce. Like, that would not show up in my house. You know, same with canned broth. So I started that for the base for the soups. But then I started reading about the benefits of bone broth. And I drink it in place of coffee now. Every morning I have either a cup of chicken broth or a cup of vegetable broth, depending on whatever I happen to have in the refrigerator. Collagen, you know, nutrients. There's all kinds of things in there, antioxidants. It promotes gut health, much better digestive. My digestive process has been much better since I've been drinking the bone broth, much better. So I personally like to sip them. The corn broth one is really good, and it's also a way of using things that you would normally throw out. For example, the corn stalk one is, it's corn on the cobs. You know, that's what it is. You eat the corn on the cob, and then you use the actual cob to make the broth.
Okay.
Which normally you would just throw that out. Now I know you're a Brockton guy. I go to the old Sidelines.
Sure.
And they have the $15.99 twin lobster special, and I get that and I eat it there. But then I take the shells and the bodies home. And I make a bisque out of it. And it takes about 40 minutes. And it's a whole nother set of meals that you get out of this one little takeout thing, you know? So I'm really a fan of the stocks. When I cut vegetables, I just keep a little Tupperware thing in the freezer and little bits and chunks here and there I throw in. And when I have enough, I make a vegetable stock out of it or I add it to a chicken stock. You can buy the bones. Beef bones are really expensive now. They used to be like $2. I used to buy them for my dog, but not anymore. But you can still get chicken bones and, you know, the bony parts you can still get relatively cheap.
Was the fun part of this, like, so like we're going to delve into talking about the lighter soups. Mm. Other than putting together the ingredients and giving the ingredients the reasons for, was another fun part of this being able to assemble this and make sure that what you're telling the reader, the folks at home who want to make this, to make sure that it was a perfect set of ingredients. Because as you said, coming from an Italian background, depending on how your grandmother or great-grandmother measured could be a difference. They didn't necessarily always use the little things that said that it was a quarter of a teaspoon. Right. They might have a pinch here and a pinch there, depending on how they applied it in the kitchen.
So I take a middle ground on that because, you know, you have to learn somewhere. And it's best to learn off of an established recipe that you know is going to work. When it calls for, you know, let's say half a teaspoon of salt, you use a half a teaspoon of salt. After you've made that soup or that broth 3, 4, 5, 6 times, you know to do a pinch of salt, and that's fine. You'll notice in some of the recipes I'm not exact with pounds. For example, the tomato one that I brought you, the recipe calls for 3 to 4 pounds of tomatoes. That's up to you. That's the consistency. If you want a thicker soup, you do a little bit more tomato. If you want a thinner soup, you do a little less tomato and a little more broth. But to your question, I think the most fun that I had, and this I started last summer and continued this summer, there are several soups in there that if you just have a regular garden at home, you can make the entire soup from your garden.
No kidding.
And at one point I had chickens. I no longer have chickens, but I did use them for some soup towards the end. But other than the protein, you know, the beef or the chicken or whatever, you can conceivably grow everything, you know, carrots, tomatoes, all. I grow onions, garlic. So for me, it's kind of a point of pride that I see every piece of food or ingredient that goes in there. And it's not something that I read the back of a label and I don't know what it is that I'm eating.
That's fantastic. So we delve into lighter soups. Again, we are speaking with a good friend, David Wheeler, the Good Soup Cookbook. These are 50 soups and broths. You definitely want to check it out, especially if you're trying to improve your health and your well-being. And there's a couple here that did like popped out, and I'll do that with some of these. And so we're short on time here, but you've got watermelon gazpacho, your cold beet soup. What went into making these? I'm somebody who love beets.
Then you love the cold beet soup.
Okay.
So in a pinch, you could use canned beets, and it would taste fine. Okay. It would raise the sodium level a little bit. So what I do is I roast the beets first. I just get fresh beets. Again, some I've grown, some I've purchased. You roast them till they're soft. I add a little bit of lime juice, sometimes a little ginger, a little grated ginger. Throw it in a blender, and it's done. And you can eat it cold, or you can warm it up. I particularly like it cold myself. The other one you mentioned, the watermelon gazpacho, yeah. I tell a little story in the book for that. I came across that at, I'll give them full credit, Beth Israel Medical Center in Boston. I went down to their cafeteria and they had they were doing like a Mexican theme or something, and they had this watermelon tomato gazpacho, and it was fantastic. And I asked them how they made it, and they really didn't know. You know, someone else had made it or whatever. So I said, you know, I'm going to recreate this. And it took three or four times. And I mean, I think I got it right. I don't know what their exact ingredients were, but when I made it, you know, it was, I thought, just as good. So.
And so, and gazpacho is actually it's a chilled soup, right?
Yeah, it's a cold soup. Yeah. Okay.
So folks don't know that.
No,
it's interesting. Yeah. And I had it one time. And so that's the only reason why I know.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the watermelon gazpacho and the yellow gazpacho?
So the yellow gazpacho is sweeter. I think the orange tomatoes and the yellowish tomatoes that particular recipe calls for is a little bit sweeter. And they also use cherry tomatoes. You can use like Sun Gold cherry tomatoes or something, which again have just a little bit of a different flavor, I think.
I think it's interesting that you try to give it a description. Example. Talk about great comfort food. Butternut squash and ginger, a beautiful orange color. Oh. This velvety soup doesn't need cream or butter, only fresh vegetables and stock.
I tell you, that probably of all the ones that I make, that one surprises people the most when they first try it. Because when you think of, you know, a butternut squash soup, you're thinking of cream and butter and all that stuff. And this is literally chicken stock, squash, some celery, some onions, some garlic, and a little bit of fresh grated ginger blended up and heated. And it really, the flavor is fantastic. And it's great because you can do it without the cream.
Before we move on to heartier soups, is there a surprise lighter soup on here that maybe folks want to keep an eye out for or sample or try? That maybe it might be a Dave personal best.
Well, like I said, the one that I brought, I really like the roasted tomato garlic. That's probably my favorite at the moment. Although, I really like leek and potato. And that's something we were talking about the garden a few minutes ago. That's something that the classic way to make leek and potato soup, which is actually a Julia Child recipe, is with water. Just literally leek sauteed in a little bit of butter, water, and potatoes. And I did it with store-bought stuff, and it wasn't the same. So I added chicken stock when I purchased the stuff from store-bought. But when I grew it at my house and I used water, I was amazed. I mean, anyone knows the difference. For example, a tomato. A homegrown tomato and a store-bought tomato are two completely different
things. Absolutely.
The same is true of potatoes. The same is true of leeks, onions, everything. So I find with using those fresh ingredients, even you know, if you're not a gardener, you get them at a farmer's market, you can then, now you're talking about limiting almost all the sodium, because really where the sodium is the chicken stock. So you're talking about really limiting that, but the leek and the potato flavors really shine through.
So we move on to heartier soups, and I immediately focused in on one particular soup. And I'll tell you, you get 5 stars in my book just because of one key ingredient that you have here. This is the split pea and potato soup. When I was a kid, my mother tried giving me split pea soup. I despised it.
Yep.
I wouldn't touch it. I got older. For some strange reason, it was like flipping the switch. I tried it one day. I'm like, oh my God, where has this been all my life?
Right, yeah.
The one ingredient I'm talking about here is this, and it's optional, Tabasco sauce.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. We're on the same page, definitely. You know, that would probably be sacrilege in, you know, like a fancy French cookbook or something. I love it. I absolutely love it. I drizzle it into the butternut squash soup on occasion, too. But the interesting thing with the split pea, I'm right there with you. I hated it as a kid. But I use, if you notice in this recipe, I use yellow split peas because I have this image in my head of that icky green-looking pea soup, and yeah, this changes everything for me. Even though a pea is probably a pea, I would guess, but it just looks a little bit different. And then when you put that little drizzle of hot sauce in there, it's just fantastic.
Is there anything here on a particular list? Because I could pop out a bunch of them. I think there's actually a chicken pea soup that's on there.
Oh, chickpea soup.
How similar or dissimilar is that to split pea? Is it similar?
No, not even close.
Okay.
Not even close. It's more like it's almost like a hummus consistency where you take the chickpeas and kind of split them up and you cut it with a little stock so it's not quite as thick as hummus. But if there are one soup that I would talk about over and over and over again, it's the Vietnamese soups that I have included here.
Yeah, you get the chicken noodle and the beef noodle.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know, you know, if you've never had the Vietnamese chicken noodle soup, it's like your grandmother's chicken soup on steroids. It's that good. It's very involved, which is why I put it kind of towards the end of the book. There's a lot to it. But the idea there is, you slowly poach the bones, so you're getting all that flavor. And then what the Vietnamese people do is they toast the ginger, the ginger and the shallots or onions, either one, doesn't matter. And then they toast the spices. So you have a little frying pan, you put, you know, black pepper, you put a little star anise, you put a little cinnamon stick, you toast that. Then you put it all together and you let it simmer for hours. And then the final ingredient at the end is the fish sauce, which sounds disgusting, but it's quite good. and you just add a little bit, a third of a cup to it. And that really takes the place of your salt, because I don't know if you know fish sauce, it's essentially pressed anchovies, you know, pressed through salt water. And it's every time I make that soup, and it's fun to eat with friends, because you serve it in a big, huge bowl and you use the chopsticks and you use the, you know, the Asian type spoons and stuff. You can't go wrong with that soup. It might take a couple tries to get it the way you want, particularly the beef one. The chicken one is a little bit easier. The beef, there's a couple different cuts of meat that you can use that change the flavor. But if you're at all a soup person, you cannot go wrong with the Vietnamese noodle soups.
You get a couple of beef stews on here.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, is that one of them, I don't know if it's a little bit of an oxymoron, but meatless beef stew.
Yes. Yes. So I married a vegetarian. And, well, actually, it was kind of a bait and switch. She wasn't a vegetarian when we got married, and then she later on became a vegetarian. So, you know, one of the things that she challenged me to do was to kind of change my eating there. We would have to do the meatless Monday, you know, for me, the meatless Mondays and things like that. But she could never get over the two things that she really missed, and she would talk about it all the time. She missed a beef stew-like dish that her aunt would make, and she missed buffalo wings. I couldn't help her with the buffalo wings. I just couldn't come up with a solution for that. But the meatless beef stew, I just use the tofu. I throw some mushrooms in there. The key to that is to cut the vegetables kind of big so it's hearty and chunky. And the tofu really does take up the flavors of everything that's there. I'm not a huge tofu fan, but, you know, if forced to eat vegetarian, I would eat that.
Is there any thought to this? It's interesting, because a couple of weeks ago I had an individual on, and we discussed the whole thing with the plant-based meats.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would there be any kind of a revision or a thought to maybe try, instead of the tofu, maybe trying a plant-based meat per se?
So, yes. So I've fooled around with some of the meatballs. I think they're called Beyond Meat. Beyond Meat. They're good. I'm not going to say that they're not good. I haven't tried any of the larger stuff. I'm leery, because when you look at it, it really is processed food. Mm. Yes, there's no meat, but there's a lot of processing that goes into that food. So I'm a little leery of it. Like I said, you know, my idea is to try to keep things simple. You know, one of the things I live by is, if your grandparents wouldn't recognize it as food, don't eat it.
That's awesome. We just got a few more minutes here. We get David Wheeler, and we're talking about the Good Soup Cookbook. We'll give you details in a moment as to how you can purchase this. I will tell you myself purchasing it. You can go to Amazon. It's on Amazon. Yeah. Just to put in the good Soup Cookbook. Heartier soups. We move right into chowders, bisques, chilies, sauces. Is there one here, whether it's the lobster bisque, the clam chowder, seafood chowder, corn chowder? Is there something here that you want to make sure you pointed to folks to try out that maybe you've dabbled with?
The seafood chowder is one that I've really fooled around with a lot over time, and I feel like I've got it kind of down. I use Old Bay seasoning myself. That, for me, that works. You can make your own kind of spice seasoning to do it, but it gives it a really nice orangey red kind of color. For that particular one in the book, I actually use chicken stock, not vegetable stock or fish stock. But I love the thick cod chunks. To me, that's the key to the whole thing, is you do the seafood stew, and then you can substitute haddock if you want. But what I really like about that is you can also use whatever's around. And as you know, we live in New England, pretty much the best place to be for seafood, you know. So you want to throw some clams in there, throw some clams. Scallops, throw some scallops in there.
One that popped out to me, tomato and crab bisque. Mm. That sounds phenomenal.
You know, bisques are something, when I was younger, I never really liked them. I didn't find them, like, filling.
Satisfying.
Yeah. But now, I think, you know, the older I got, we talked a little bit about how I, you know, I'm trying to eat less anyway. But I've also come to really appreciate the complicated flavors of a bisque or a soup that's, you know, blended like that. I really, really like that.
Last thing we should touch upon, and I was impressed when I saw this, the well-stocked soup kitchen. You actually, for someone who's a novice when it comes to wanting to put this stuff together, you actually kind of give them a laundry list of things that they should have on hand.
Yeah.
When they're making soups.
So there's nothing more frustrating when you're following a recipe and you're trying to do something and you go to reach for an ingredient and you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more frustrating than that. So one of the things that I tried to do was list some ingredients and equipment that I think, you know, anyone who wants to be, forget soups, just a decent cook, these are the things that you should have. I guess the number one thing for equipment I would put up there, probably a tie, would be the Dutch oven. I just love my enamel cast iron Dutch oven. I use it for everything. And probably the hand blender or a stick blender, particularly where a lot of the lighter soups, we blend them up, you know, so that's good. And then when you get to, there are certain staples that just should be in every pantry. And, I have a list of them here. One that we didn't talk about that I definitely want to mention.
Please do.
Is lentils. If you notice, through a lot of the recipes, in place of rice, I put lentils. In place of noodles, I put lentils. And lentils are truly a superfood. There's just no doubt about it. So and they keep forever on the shelf. So I buy the red and usually the green. The red get a little bit mushier, so they're good for a soup. They're almost like a thick and hearty. Whereas the green, or if you want a little more of a thinner soup, you use that. But what I try to do is give the reader a list of things that you should have in your pantry, but that are also good for you. For example, you don't see sugar on that list. Cream is not on that list. Butter is not on that list. Olive oil is on that list. Turmeric is on that list, which there is a lot of research now about. Turmeric as an anti-inflammatory. Same with ginger, balsamic vinegar. So there's a lot of natural, healthier things that you can use. For example, the vinegar you can use in place of salt.
The only thing I would take you to task as we wrap up this conversation with David Wheeler is hot sauce. I'm sorry, but not all hot sauce cuts it in my kitchen. And if you showed up with a container of Frank's, I might ask you to leave my house. I'm not a fan. I don't care
yeah.
if it's great on wings. It doesn't. Yeah. We got a bottle of it at the house. That's only because the youngest child loves it, and allowed it.
Yeah,
she smuggled it in during the dark of night, and it's been in the fridge since. But it's me. It's Tabasco, or if it's something, if you go to get some hot sauces at Faneuil Hall. Maybe I'll consider it. So that's the only thing I would take it in a friendly manner.
Fair enough. People are rabid about their hot sauces. Personally, I'm on a Cholula kick at the moment. I like Cholula. It's not real spicy.
It's okay. I've done a little of the Sriracha, so I'm okay with spicy stuff. Yeah. Folks want to find out more as we wrap up this program and we wrap up this great segment. I thank you for coming in. I thank you for bringing me some homemade soup.
Thanks for having me.
If folks want to find out more, how can they find out more about you and your book and some of the other books that you have?
Sure. So probably the best thing is to go on my website, which is just davewheeleronline.com. And right now that has a lot of links to some of my other businesses, but I'll be putting some of the recipes up there, you know, as teaser for the book and a link so that you can buy the book. So feel free to, you know, check that out. And you can also just go to Amazon. And you can search for either my name, David Wheeler, and my author page will come up, or you can just search for The Good Soup Cookbook, and it should come right up.
I want to thank you again for being a friend and coming in and participating tonight. It's fantastic. And, of course, make sure I say this right, roasted tomato and garlic soup.
Is that correct? You got it. Okay. Enjoy it.
And again, get yourself educated. Again, if you're an older person like myself and David, soup is good food. It definitely is. And the results show you look fantastic.
Well,
continued success. And I want to thank you at home for tuning in to this program. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night. You've been listening to Monday Night Talk.